Venezuela breaks decade-long default with formal debt restructuring plan. And number 10,022, takeaways by Plaquemium AI Hyde. And number 9,650, Venezuela formally announced a debt restructuring plan on Wednesday, breaking a decade-long default that began in 2017 with total liabilities estimated between $150 billion and $170 billion. Unpaid bonds alone total approximately $60 billion, with the remainder comprising PDVSA obligations, bilateral loans from China and Russia, and arbitral awards from expropriation cases. Acting President Delcy Rodriguez and #X27's administration framed the move as an #X27, integral and orderly and #X27, restructuring, citing U.S. sanctions imposed since 2017 as the cause of non-payment. The Venezuelan government on Wednesday formally announced the restructuring of its public external debt and PDVSA obligations, initiating what Reuters describes as one of the largest unresolved sovereign defaults in the world, with total liabilities estimated between $150 billion and $170 billion accumulated across nearly a decade of non-payment. Acting President Delcy Rodriguez's administration issued the communique through the Sectoral Vice Presidency for the Economy, framing the move as an integral and orderly restructuring. Venezuela has been in default since 2017, when Washington imposed sanctions that Caracas cites as the proximate cause of non-payment. Unpaid bonds alone total approximately $60 billion, according to estimates collected by Reuters, with the remainder comprising PDVSA obligations, bilateral loans from China and Russia, and arbitral awards from expropriation cases brought by companies including ConocoPhillips and Crystalex. The announcement did not specify concrete mechanisms, deadlines, or designated counterparts for negotiation. Those details were not disclosed in the official communique. $150 to $170 billion, Reuters' estimate of Venezuela's total external debt exposure, making this restructuring among the largest sovereign default resolutions ever attempted. The omission of operational specifics matters enormously to distressed debt investors who have held Venezuelan paper at steep discounts for years. Without a defined creditor committee structure, a clear IMF program anchor, or disclosed haircut parameters, the announcement is a declaration of intent, not a term sheet. For institutional capital, the gap between intent and execution is where value is either created or destroyed. Why now? The answer traces directly to Washington. On May 5, the U.S. Treasury Department issued General License 58, temporarily authorizing the provision of legal and financial advisory services to Venezuela and PDVSA in connection with a potential restructuring. That license arrived 20 days after the International Monetary Fund announced the restoration of relations with Caracas following a 7-year rupture, opening the door to technical and eventual financial assistance. Both moves flow from the Trump administration's strategic recalibration following the January 3 military operation in which U.S. forces captured Nicolás Maduro, who now faces judicial proceedings in New York. The sequencing is deliberate. IMF re-engagement first, advisory license second, formal restructuring announcement third. This is a Washington-orchestrated financial normalization track, not a spontaneous Caracas initiative. General License 58 and the IMF anchor, what the creditor stack needs. Sovereign debt restructurings of this scale require multilateral scaffolding. Argentina's 2020 restructuring, which addressed roughly $65 billion in foreign law bonds, took 9 months of active negotiation after Buenos Aires secured IMF technical support. Venezuela's task is structurally more complex. The creditor universe spans distressed debt funds, bilateral state lenders, China and Russia hold significant exposure from loans extended under both Hugo Chavez and Maduro, and corporate claimants holding arbitral awards with legal enforcement rights in multiple jurisdictions. ConocoPhillips and Crystalex are specifically named in the source material as holders of outstanding arbitral awards. These creditors sit in a legally distinct position from bondholders. Arbitral awards can trigger attachment of PDVSA assets in third-country jurisdictions, a dynamic that has historically complicated Venezuela's ability to move oil revenues through international banking channels. Any restructuring framework must address this creditor tier explicitly, or attachment risk will continue to impede the energy sector normalization that Washington is prioritizing. General License 58 is a narrow but meaningful instrument. It does not sanction broad economic engagement. It authorizes advisory services, meaning U.S.-domiciled investment banks and law firms can now formally pitch for mandates on the restructuring. The practical effect is that Caracas can begin assembling the professional infrastructure, bankers, lawyers, financial advisors, that a credible restructuring process requires. Without that license, even preliminary conversations carried legal risk for U.S. persons. The IMF's return after 7 years of rupture provides the technical credibility anchor. Historically, sovereign debt restructurings that proceed without IMF engagement produce worse recovery rates for creditors and shorter-lived agreements. The fund's involvement signals to bilateral creditors, particularly China, that Caracas is operating within a recognized multilateral framework, which reduces Beijing's political risk in accepting haircuts. The energy sector calculus, Trump's strategic priority. The Trump administration's approach to Venezuela is not primarily a financial policy. It is an energy policy. The White House has explicitly prioritized unblocking Venezuela's energy sector as a strategic axis for reducing U.S. oil dependence on Persian Gulf supplies, according to Merco Press. This framing is consequential for PDVSA creditors. If Washington's objective is Venezuelan oil production recovery, then PDVSA's operational rehabilitation becomes a U.S. strategic interest, not merely a commercial one. That changes the negotiating dynamics for distressed bondholders. A U.S. administration motivated to see PDVSA functional has an incentive to facilitate, rather than obstruct, a resolution that restores the company's access to capital markets and international service contracts. The broader geopolitical context amplifies this logic. The Trump Xi summit in Beijing this week placed energy security at the center of the bilateral agenda, with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz having driven U.S. inflation to 3.8% annually in April, the fastest rate since May 2023, according to BBC News. Venezuelan heavy crude, which historically flowed to U.S. Gulf Coast refineries designed to process it, represents a direct partial substitute for Persian Gulf barrels. Restoring that supply chain is worth more to Washington than the face value of any bondholder's position. The creditor map, distressed funds, Beijing, and arbitral claimants. The creditor universe divides into three distinct groups, each with different incentives and legal leverage. Source, Reuters estimates, as reported by Merco Press, May 14, 2026. Individual bilateral and arbitral figures were not disclosed in available source material. China's position is the structural wildcard. Beijing is the single largest bilateral creditor, having extended loans to both Chavez and Maduro administrations. China simultaneously holds the strongest negotiating leverage and the most complex incentive structure. It wants debt repayment, continued access to Venezuelan oil, and a seat at the table in any post-restructuring governance framework. The Trump Xi summit this week in Beijing creates an unusual diplomatic channel through which the contours of Chinese debt treatment could theoretically be discussed at the highest level, though the summit agenda as reported centers on Iran, Taiwan, tariffs, rare earths, and AI rather than Venezuela specifically. Russia's bilateral exposure is smaller and politically more constrained given the current geopolitical environment. Terms were not disclosed in available source material. The execution gap, what the communique did not say. The official communique from the sectoral vice presidency for the economy sets objectives but provides no operational architecture. No creditor committee has been announced. No financial advisor has been publicly mandated. No IMF program framework, even a staff-monitored program, has been disclosed as a precondition. No indicative timeline for completing the restructuring has been stated. For institutional investors assessing entry into Venezuelan distressed paper, this gap is the central risk. Sovereign restructurings that lack clear process governance tend to drag. Argentina's 2001 default took until 2016 to fully resolve with holdout creditors. Zambia's 2020 default was not restructured until 2023. Greece's 2012 restructuring, which proceeded with EU and IMF scaffolding already in place, still required months of intensive negotiation. Venezuela's situation is more complex than any of these precedents because of the simultaneous presence of three distinct legal creditor categories, each requiring different treatment. Designing a restructuring that satisfies bondholders, state bilateral creditors, and arbitral award holders under a single framework, while restoring PDVSA's operational capacity fast enough to generate the oil revenues needed to service any new instruments, is an execution challenge with no clean historical template. The Plaquemines view the market is reading this announcement as a trigger event. Plaquemines reads it as the opening bid in a multi-year process where the terminal value depends almost entirely on factors outside Venezuela's control, the durability of the Trump administration's sanctions relief posture, the pace of IMF program negotiation, and the willingness of China to accept meaningful haircuts on bilateral debt. The second-order play that the source reporting does not address is PDVSA equity rehabilitation. If the restructuring proceeds and Venezuelan oil production recovers toward even half of its 2013 peak levels, above 2.5 million barrels per day at that time, versus current output that international agencies have estimated in a fraction of that range, the enterprise value uplift to PDVSA as an operating entity would dwarf the face value of the bonds being restructured. Distressed investors who acquire bonds are implicitly acquiring optionality on that production recovery. The bonds are not the primary asset. The oil is. The IMF re-engagement is the single most important data point in this announcement, more important than the communique text itself. The fund's return after 7 years signals that Caracas has made commitments, not yet public, sufficient to restore that relationship. Those commitments likely include fiscal transparency, central bank data publication, and exchange rate normalization. Each of those, if implemented, represents a structural improvement in Venezuela's investability that compounds the value of early entry into distressed positions. Institutional allocators considering exposure should watch for three signposts: the formal appointment of a financial advisor, which will name the banks involved and signal seriousness of process; publication of any IMF Article 4 consultation, which will provide the first credible macroeconomic framework; and a defined creditor committee structure, which will reveal which distressed funds have accumulated the largest positions and will drive negotiating outcomes. The risk is not that this restructuring fails to launch. The risk is that it launches, stalls, and Venezuela's political transition reverses before completion, stranding creditors in a prolonged limbo worse than the current default equilibrium. The bottom line: Venezuela's restructuring announcement opens the largest sovereign debt resolution process of this decade, with total liabilities between $150 billion and $170 billion and a creditor map that spans Wall Street distressed funds, Beijing, Moscow, and international arbitration tribunals. The enabling conditions, General License 58 and IMF re-engagement, are real. The process architecture is not yet visible. For private equity and distressed debt allocators, the trade is real but early. Position sizing should reflect the execution gap between a government communique and a completed exchange offer. The energy production recovery thesis, not the bond recovery rate, is the asymmetric upside. Watch the IMF program timeline. That is the clock that governs everything else.